It is so difficult for juries to believe, and for really sometimes the public to believe, that women engage in this kind of behavior.
Well, it's always great to give a shout out to child advocacy centers because they do help so much, not only with the victims, but putting together a case and not re-victimizing the victims.
This case probably would not have turned out the same way that it did. We truly had to follow the money in this case to add credibility to these girls' statements.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello, and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is your host, Jim Clementi, with my co-host, Francie Hakes.
Hi, Jim.
How are you, Francie?
Good.
Always great to do this show with you. And today we have another very special guest, Paula Sparks, who's an investigator with the state of Georgia. How you doing, Paula?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us today on Best Case, Worst Case. And we'd like to sort of get a little background on you. Tell us what you did for your professional career.
I was a local police officer in the state of Georgia, Cobb County Police Department. I retired in 2012 from as a major in the Crimes Against Persons Unit, which basically covered homicide, robbery, crimes against children, crime scene, and the likes of that type of investigation.
And Paula, how long were you with Cobb County PD?
28 years.
Wow, 28 years.
That's a long time. And you
it was, but it was fulfilling.
Yeah, well, you obviously did a great job, and you worked some pretty serious offenses. So why don't we get right into it? What was your best case in your law enforcement career? What kind of crime was it?
When you say best, I think of what the best of an outcome was. So what my best case was, it was in reference to a child abuse case, sexual abuse.
And when was this case in your career, just estimating, Paula?
I think it was in the arena of 2002, 2003.
And Paula, that's about the same time you and I knew each other, when you were a lieutenant in the Crimes Against Children unit at the Cobb County Police Department, right?
Correct, yes.
So because of the nature of this particular crime, we're not going to be disclosing the names of the victim or of the offenders, and we'll just call them Defendant 1 and Defendant 2. Is that okay, Paula?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, great. So can you tell us how this case came to your attention, first instance?
Well, there was an outcry initially, but that happened in another jurisdiction. The jurisdiction attempted to press charges on the mother initially for some situations that the mother was involved in, and she was able to elude being convicted, and she came to Cobb County. It came to our attention through outcries from the victim, two victims, two sisters, that their mother was selling them or basically allowing them, and she was present, to be sexually abused by one of the perpetrators, a defendant. And then
wow.
That's where our investigation began.
Wow. So the victims, instead of being able to run to their mother for help, they were actually being abused by their mother. She was actually coordinating and allowing sexual victimization of her daughters.
Yes.
So, Paula, you described that this mother was exploiting her daughters by allowing others to sexually assault them. How old were these girls at the time this occurred?
Both of the girls were under 10 years of age.
Oh, Paula, under 10. And was there you had said that she got away with something similar in another jurisdiction. The girls made outcries, or at least one of them did. To whom did the children disclose that this was going on once they came into your jurisdiction?
I believe it was a neighborhood child that they had talked about the situation, and that's when it came to our attention.
And so how did you respond to the case? Obviously, you opened an investigation, but what were some of the first things that you did?
Well, one of the first things that you do in any investigation is you begin interviews of the children, and that's exactly what we did. And we got very, what we considered at that time, credible information from the girls as to what had been occurring.
And Paula, when you say that one of the most important things to do in an investigation like this is to get a good interview of the children, is that what's called a forensic interview?
That's correct. It's a forensic interview. It's with somebody who knows how to pose the questions based on the age range of the children and be delicate with the questions that are necessary to be asked.
Did you have a child advocacy center nearby with a forensically trained child interview specialist?
Yes. In my jurisdiction, the detectives were the forensically trained interviewers. They were the investigators and the interviewers, but they had also been sent to a school for forensically trained interviews.
And that was the Safe Path Child Advocacy Center there in Marietta, Georgia, right, Paula?
That's correct.
Well, it's always great to give a shout-out to child advocacy centers because they do help so much, not only with the victims, but putting together a case and not re-victimizing the victims.
Well, and as I know from having been an assistant district attorney there in Cobb County, I worked very closely with Paula's unit and the Safe Path Child Advocacy Center, where detectives, Paula's unit, was actually co-located in the same building, and they still are today co-located in the same building with the Child Advocacy Center so that they can conduct interviews in a child-friendly atmosphere. You know, the walls are painted with butterflies and balloons, the furniture is child-sized, and there are therapists and forensic evaluators there. And as Paula said, the Cobb County Crimes Against Children detectives, I think, Paula, in what is a tribute to Cobb County, are all trained to be forensic interviewers, which is definitely not the case in the rest of the country, is it?
That's correct. That's atypical in most advocacy center situations.
Right. So you got the children or a detective interviewed both the children. I assume they were interviewed separately.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. You want to get the best and most pristine information that you can right from the get-go of these children.
And Jim and I do a lot of training on this particular topic, things like indicators of veracity. You said a few minutes ago that the children gave what you thought was credible information. Tell us about the information and why you thought it was credible.
Well, basically, both of them gave fairly similar information, as you just alluded to, in very separate interviews, and both of them were consistent in nature. And they gave details that either a child shouldn't know, and gave details, especially in this case, it was against their mother, and they gave us very valid and in-depth details about the situation involving their mother, such as not only was she providing each of these children to this man for sexual situations, but she, in some instances, both of the girls disclosed that the mother was present and holding their hand so that they would go through with these situations and she would get paid for it.
Wow, that's really, really awful. And when I when I come into these kinds of cases where it's actually, you know, the people who are responsible for giving the child life and who are responsible for protecting that child throughout their childhood, to take advantage of that child like that and for their own gain, it's just reprehensible, and no kid should have to go through that. So thank you for championing these kids and doing this kind of work, because I know it's very difficult.
Well, and, you know, one of the things I think is very significant about this case, Paula, and I'm glad you brought it to our attention so that our listeners know, is that in it seems like in the vast majority of sexual abuse cases, the defendant, the offender, is always a man, and or male anyway. And here you have not just female offender, but a female mother offender. And it is so difficult for juries to believe, and for really sometimes the public to believe, that women engage in this kind of behavior, because our popular culture says, you know, mama lion protecting her young. And sadly, Paula, we know that very often that's not true, like this case, right?
Correct. Yes. Seldom do we find that mothers are actually as overt in the manner that this woman was. Normally, it's they turn a blind eye, so as not to disrupt the family and those type of things. But in this case, and something we rarely see, is that this was an extremely overt action by the mother, as you mentioned, the person we expect to protect the child.
So, not that this would actually mitigate the reprehensible conduct on the part of the mother, but was she addicted to drugs? Was there something that she was using this money for that you could find in this investigation?
No, I think that it was just that was an income. It was the manner of lifestyle that she wanted to be exposed to, and the extreme amount of money that she was getting allowed her to be a part of that lifestyle. My point behind this being one of the best cases is this never would have come to light. We were able to put her through trial, or put her to trial, and she absconded on us. But not for a detective, and a very specific detective, and I think Francie can attest to this. Most of us are trained in different types of homicide, child sexual abuse, or whatever, but most of us are not trained in the white collar situation of crimes. I know I'm not. I would not. I'd be a terrible financial. But if it had not been placed in the hands of this specific detective, who was able to basically, not to use a old adage, but follow the money, this case probably would not have turned out the same way. Wow. That it did. Because you truly had to follow the money in this case to add credibility to these girls' statements. And even though we think they're very credible, you always want something there to add further evidence to it.
Let's give a shout out to the detective. I mean, I think that sounds like great work on his or her part.
Absolutely. I'm going to say it was a group effort. It was a fantastically group effort, where one would investigate and one took the money aspect and made a spreadsheet out of it.
That's
so
great.
It was the Crimes Against Children unit. But yeah, it was a fantastic group investigation.
And roughly how much money are we talking about now?
We're talking hundreds of thousands, not hundreds, I'm sorry, in the right up to about hundreds of thousands of dollars of money. This was a very this was an individual who spent a lot of money for this. I mean, I think, as we know, it's probably very hard to find somebody, especially in local communities, who's willing to do what this woman did. So when he found it, he was willing to pay for it.
Did he do this, and did the mother pimp out her daughters over and over and over again?
Yes, there were multiple times.
And so, Paula, when you say the case started in another jurisdiction and it was an unsuccessful prosecution over there, were there multiple offenders that were paying to sexually assault these girls, or was it the same one offender throughout the entire time?
In the other jurisdiction, we believe that there were family members who abused the children. In Cobb County's jurisdiction, we believe that it was only one paid offender that the children were involved with.
And was there any child pornography, images of child sexual abuse being produced in this kind of case? Was he or was the mother recording it in any way?
Not that we could find, no. Not that the children, there were pictures, but I don't believe there were any pictures that were of that nature.
Okay, so your investigation was partly financial because you were following the money. Then you had the children's interviews. Let's talk a little bit about physical evidence, because I think our listeners will be quite interested, although I think our listeners are sophisticated crime purveyors, and so maybe they know this already. But I'm interested to talk to you a little bit, Paula, about whether or not you were able to get any DNA or forensic evidence from the bodies of the children, which juries today often expect and don't know what the reality is in these kinds of cases. So can you talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, no, by the time we got involved, I mean, I'm not saying that it wasn't occurring, but it hadn't occurred for several days. So there's not any, typically in any child abuse investigation, typically, unless you're talking about some type of heinous rape or forcible situation, these situations, you typically do not find any type of DNA evidence. And in this case, we found that it was no difference.
And was did these young girls under 10 years old have to undergo a rape kit, that is a sexual assault exam?
Not to the degree that we would expect in the hospital, that we have trained nurses who understand the situations. In Cobb County, I'm not sure how it is in others, but pediatric nurses who understand who are trained in the field of child sexual abuse, and they know the things to look for, but no, not in the manner of a true sexual assault kit that they have to go through that.
And that's, again, because Cobb County has nurses that have this advanced training.
Correct.
Well, the next thing I'd like to talk about is how you actually put the case together, how you did the investigation, how you were able to bring this poor excuse for a mother to justice.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
So, Paula, can you tell us how this investigation proceeded at this point?
You've interviewed the children. You've gotten really good, credible statements. You're following the money. How did you get from that to arresting these two offenders? How did you find the man who was paying the mother to abuse her children?
The children were able to tell us who this individual was.
And were they related, or was he a stranger? How was he connected to the mother?
They were strangers initially, and then they met in some, I think, through the other individual that was involved, the mother's sister. And basically a conversation ensued, and found out that he found himself a gold mine and a mother who was willing to allow him to abuse the children.
Was this all done face-to-face, over the phone, over the internet? What? The crime itself?
The crime itself was, yes, face-to-face.
All right, great. And so then the children were able to identify their assault, the person who was assaulting them. Obviously, they inculpated the mother. And so at that point, did you feel like you had your case built and were ready to make arrests?
Yes, we issued warrants initially on the mother and the aunt. And the both of them fled the jurisdiction of Cobb County.
And how was the aunt involved in all of this?
If the mother wasn't able to provide the children or pick them up or meet the time frame that the perpetrator was asking, the aunt would be involved in that.
Wow. I mean,
and some of the money indicated that also through the money orders and through payment and deposits and things like that.
So the aunt was profiting also in this scheme.
I would presume that the mother was sharing. Yes.
Wow. So did you actually end up charging the mother and her sister?
We ended up taking warrants out on them. Yes, and later on, the mother was located. And she was with another individual, and she was pregnant. And that is where part of my best case scenario comes out, is that we were able to take that child. Of course, she ended up in jail, but I think, and I'm going to guess, based on her previous behavior, that prevented another child from being subject to a sexual abuse situation.
Well, it sounds like that's absolutely true. So the mother left, and after she was charged, and then at some point, did you go to trial before she was recovered, or did you wait till she was actually arrested to go to trial?
Yes.
Okay, so tell us what happened next. Did she leave the jurisdiction, the mother and the aunt?
They did. They fled the jurisdiction, and then they were initially found in another jurisdiction. They were brought back, and they pled guilty. So we did not go to trial prior to their absence.
Okay.
And when they pled guilty, did they agree to cooperate against the other offender, or had he already been convicted by then?
He had killed himself by then. He had committed suicide.
And was that after this hit the news, or what were the circumstances around that?
That was during the time of the investigation, before we ever took charges.
But had he been pointed out, had the investigators interviewed him, had the other defendants, the mother and the aunt, contacted him and let him know that the cops were coming?
That would be a guess.
But so you guys didn't have a chance then to interview him at all?
We did not.
So he killed himself before you were even able to get to that stage?
That's correct.
And then mom and sister fled. They came back and they pled guilty. What were their, what were they sentenced to?
Once they pled guilty and convicted, they were both sentenced to an extended time in prison.
So that's good. At least they were not able to get access to those kids anymore. And hopefully other kids, like her newest baby, never became victim because of that. But you mentioned that the other offender, that this guy, who we will not name, committed suicide. And just for our listeners' benefit, if he was still a sex offender who was out there, we would say his name, but we don't want to even give him the benefit of people knowing who he is at this point. Luckily, he's out of the situation. And he's not a risk to anybody anymore. But in terms of committing suicide, I know in the course of when I was in law enforcement and working child sex crimes, that a number of defendants did commit suicide. And many people were like, good, that's what should happen, and on and on. But I don't think they understand how dangerous that is. When a person, there's a very thin line between suicide and homicide. And when a person has given up all hope and wants to end their own life, they are very high risk at taking out other people. So we should never, like, encourage that kind of situation because it could be very dangerous. I've had police officers shot at or shot by defendants who felt they were trapped in a situation like this and were going to kill themselves and wanted to take out the police with them. So it's a very critical time during the course of investigations like this. And I just want to warn people around people who get caught for this kind of thing that they can become very dangerous at this point.
I had a similar case, Jim, when I first started as an assistant U.S. attorney, and it was back in my old home jurisdiction. We had a case where we had someone suspected of trafficking in child pornography. He worked as a clown at children's birthday parties.
Wow.
And when the local detectives responded with the federal agents to arrest him to his house, he barricaded himself into his garage, and he had at least one firearm. And one of his children, who was a teenager, was in the house with him.
Oh, man.
So the law enforcement responding to the scene were concerned once he started shooting at them that that child was in danger. And so they were not going to let it be some kind of standoff situation just in case the child was in danger. So they entered the garage very quickly. And while they were entering the garage, the guy slit his throat. And I believe he died on the way to the hospital or shortly thereafter. Paula, do you remember that case?
I do. I responded to that one as a critical incident individual, not as from a sexual abuse standpoint. But yes, I remember that very vividly.
And so just like Jim said a few minutes ago, those people who are hopeless, who understand they're about to get arrested for these child sex crimes, can be very dangerous. And that's why it's risky for law enforcement in these cases, even though they're not, you know, drug dealers or murderers, they are about to be accused of or convicted of a sex crime, and so they can be very dangerous.
Absolutely.
Well, Paula, we really appreciate you telling us about this case. And just to sum up for our listeners, can you tell us why you picked this particular case out of all the hundreds of cases that you worked during your career as your best case?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, anytime that a child is sexually abused, I think that's just a heinous situation. But when everything comes together in the end, when there's a conviction and you get the children out of the situation where there's perpetrators, be it the mother or whomever is the perpetrator, and you get them help, such as from children's advocacy centers, Safe Path in our jurisdiction, and then when, in this case, the mother was pregnant and we prevent any other children from being exposed to that same type of sexual abuse, I think that it's a win-win for everybody. And in this case, although it was some heinous circumstances that the case revolved around, in the end, I think it was a win-win for everybody. The children got in and got help, and we prevented another child that was close to birth from being involved in the same situation.
Well, I think that's great, and just so people know that in these cases, a lot of times people think, well, the child's life is destroyed and they could never go on to live a good, happy, healthy, productive life. But it's not true. I'm living proof of that. I was victimized when I was a kid and I still happen to have a great life afterwards. I just want to caution people who work these cases or who talk about these cases to not say that it destroys a child's life, because they can grow up to live a happy, healthy, productive life, as long as they get help and as long as somebody does help bring them justice. And so we want to thank you for doing that, Paula. You're a hero.
Well, I appreciate that. But there are many, many heroes out there who are doing exactly this and continue to do this.
Well, that's absolutely the case, Paula. And we try to remember that whenever Jim and I teach, to thank the people that we're helping train in these kinds of cases. And I know you do the same thing. Thank you so much for joining us today and giving us all of this great information about child advocacy centers and how there can be a happy ending to a grim case.
Oh, a pleasure. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you for being here, Paula, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon. For now, signing off for Best Case, Worst Case. Thank you for listening. Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production, produced by Jim Clementi at Empire Studios, LA. Engineered and edited by Terrell Parham. Music by Simba Sumba. And hosted by Wondery.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.